Bessie, come on. Bessie, I said, come on. These people are waiting on us. I tell you what, you are about as stubborn as a mule. Well, you just stay out here. I'm going to go in. I got to do business. I'm sorry, folks. I brought my donkey with me, Bessie, all the way from Susa, and I come in here this morning, and she won't even come up in here with me so y'all could meet her. I apologize. Kind of feel like maybe we got it started on the wrong foot today, but I hope what I'm going to share with you is going to be helpful. My story began in the year 440 B.C., the month of Kislev. It was the fall of the year, around October, kind of like it is now, where the winter was fast approaching, the evenings were getting cool, the green forests had turned to a golden brown. It had been over 140 years since the time that the northern kingdom of Israel had been attacked by the Assyrians and had been conquered by the Assyrians. The southern kingdom of Judah and Benjamin had been attacked by the Babylonians, and the Babylonians had conquered the southern kingdom. But the most tragic thing that happened when the southern kingdom was conquered is that a very special city, God's holy city, Jerusalem, the place where His presence dwelt, the place where His glory dwelt, the place where Solomon's temple and all of its glory and all of its furnishings, the place where that dwelt, the whole city of Jerusalem had been destroyed by the Babylonians. Thousands of people had been killed, men, women, children. Thousands of them had been displaced. Thousands of them had been taken captive. Many of them had just been left to starve. It had been over 140 years since that happened, but the city of Jerusalem still had issues to this day. Over 50,000 of the Jews, my fellow brothers and sisters, had about 70 years or so, they had returned into the city of Jerusalem to try to rebuild it. They had made for themselves homes. Some godly men like Zechariah and Haggai and Zerubbabel, along with others, had rebuilt the temple so that the people could come together and worship Jehovah, the true God. A very godly, godly man, a priest named Ezra, one of my contemporaries, had been used by God to go back into Jerusalem and help the people reorient their lives around God's law. And so some good things had happened by the time that I, Nehemiah, arrived on the scene. But the people still had one very significant problem. Even though much of the infrastructure had been rebuilt in Jerusalem, the temple had been rebuilt, though not to its former glory, the one problem they still had were the walls. The walls that surrounded the city of Jerusalem. The walls that represented strength and security and peace. The walls that made a difference between sleeping soundly at night or staying half awake, worried that a band of raging warriors were going to bust in at any time and kill you and your family. The walls had been destroyed. The gates had been burned by fire. And in the city of Jerusalem, what once was this glorious city with fortification and protection, now was a city that was open. Now was a city that was exposed to attack from any number of people. And when I first heard word of the report that the destruction that had taken place, that the walls still were lying in ruins, I was actually living in a place called Susa. Susa was the capital of this area. I was working for the king, King Artaxerxes. I was a cupbearer to the king, so I had a pretty good life. There wasn't much that I wanted for. I knew where my next meal was going to come from. I had safety. I had security. But there was a question that haunted me. The question that haunted me about those walls that had been torn down was this: will those walls ever be restored? Will my brothers and sisters, the Jewish people, ever live with strength? Will they ever live with security? Will they ever live with peace? And will God's greatness ever be made known through that city? And the strangest thing began to happen as I heard the report of what took place. I began to break on the inside. I began to weep. I began to fast. I began to pray. I began to mourn. Because I saw that the devastation that had taken place in that area had not been restored. There had not been the rebuilding process to take what was torn down and put it back to the way that it was originally intended to be. And so when I saw this taking place, I was broken. I didn't really know who to turn to. I thought I could go to the king because I'm in his employ. I'm a cupbearer to the king. And I appear before him on a regular basis, but I made a decision. I made a decision to not go to any man. I made a decision to go to God. And I brought the situation before him. And the first thing that I did is I got my heart right. I came before God and I confessed every sin that I could think of. I confessed sins of my brothers and sisters that they might not have even known that they were committing. I just cleaned house. I got my heart right with God. And he broke me, and as I got my heart right with him, I worked through that process, and I came to him, and I said, "Now, Father, I'm broken here," but then I claimed the promises that he had made about the people who were his chosen people. And I claimed the promise that if his people would return to him, that he would bring them back, that he would restore them. I claimed that promise of God, and with the only boldness that I could muster, I came before him, and I said, because I knew that if something was going to happen about these walls, that God was going to be the one who was going to do it. And as I sensed something happening in me, I sensed this calling, I sensed this stirring, that these walls needed to be rebuilt and God wanted me to do that, I came before him and I asked him for favor. I asked him for favor with the king because I knew that if God's hand was at work, if God was really giving me a vision to see something restored, that I would see that through his hand at work in the lives of people around me. And so I asked him for favor with the king. And I prayed for favor with the king. But you know what? God chose for some reason not to answer that prayer right away. And have you ever thought that it's strange that sometimes you know what needs to happen? Maybe right now you know some walls that are broken down in your life and you know that they need to be rebuilt. You know that they need to be restored. But for some reason when you pray, for some reason God just doesn't answer. You know, for me, that was in the fall when I first began to pray in that direction. It was four long, long months through that entire winter. God just didn't answer. And it was tough for me to understand because I was broken, I was ready, I knew what needed to happen. The walls were torn down and they, by golly, they needed to be rebuilt. And in those 4 months of waiting, in those 4 months where God just didn't seem to be orchestrating the circumstances. I mean, I felt like he was calling me to do something, but I didn't really see his hand at work the way that I wanted to see his hand at work. And so as this happened and I felt like God was doing something, but I didn't see his hand at work out there. You know, I'm human. And you know what we humans tend to do? We begin to question in the dark even those things that God clearly showed us when we were in the light. And I began to wonder, God, is this really your plan for me? And I'm sure none of you have done this, but I began to come up with a list of reasons why God couldn't really build the situation back in my life. He really couldn't rebuild the walls of my brothers and sisters. I began to make excuses. I thought to myself, well, these people over there, they've been living with these broken, busted, destroyed walls for years and years. Some of them have been living that way for generations. And why, God, would you want me, who I'm living here with some pretty secure, fortified walls, why would you want me to go out there where the walls are busted down? I've got a good zone that I'm living in right now. You might call it your comfort zone. I've got a good place where you have me right now. I have a great job. And besides that, if those people over there have become so hardened and the only normal they know is destruction, if they're not willing to do anything about the brokenness, why should I? Why should I be willing to venture out of this place where you have me right now, travel almost 1,000 miles to a people that they're my brothers and sisters, but I don't know a lot of them? Why would I do that? And God, don't you understand that there have been a couple of attempts made already to rebuild the walls? And the last attempt that was made, the king himself, King Artaxerxes, came in and issued a decree that work be stopped. And if I came before the king and presented this new request to him, if he didn't like that request or he thought I was somehow usurping his authority, he could take me outside and have me killed. This was a big risk, this business of rebuilding what was torn down. And why would I go and do something like that? Besides that, I was a cupbearer, not a carpenter. I didn't have any men. I didn't have any materials. I didn't have the resources. I mean, who was I, a normal, ordinary, common guy, to be called to something that was so extraordinary? And so for many reasons such as these, I thought to myself, I've got a great job right now. Things are going well. Why would I leave from where I am right now to try to go and rebuild what was broken? There was one reason. Vision. In the midst of a time when thousands upon thousands of people saw what was, God had given me the ability to see what could be. God had given me the ability to see what should be. And I want to say to you this morning that with God's help, He had given me the ability to see what would be. And when I looked at the devastation that was there, I didn't just have a mental picture or some kind of vision of what was at the time. I had a vision of what could be. And it was that vision that drove me. It was that vision that took me through that long winter. When the tears and the emotion dried up, and replacing the tears and emotion was a sobering realization of how extraordinary this call was that God was placing on my life. It was a vision of what God could do through an ordinary, common man. It was a vision. And so when that spring came, the month of Nisan, 4 months later after I'd sensed that initial call, God made it available, an opportunity for me to talk to the king. And I want you to know that through the course of that time, by the time the spring came around, I was ready. I was prepared. I was ready to pray. I was ready to work. I was ready to organize. I was ready to recruit. I was ready to give my all to build that wall. And that leads me to ask you two very important questions. The first question is this. Are there walls in your life that need to be either repaired or totally rebuilt? For some of you, the walls may be something somewhat external, something some folks might see as sort of unspiritual. But they're walls nonetheless that are very important to you. Maybe a wall for you is something to do with your job, something to do with your business, something to do with your career. You feel like maybe the walls have been torn down. You feel like maybe you're not sure where to turn next. And you wonder, are those walls ever going to be rebuilt? For some of you, the wall that may need to be rebuilt has something to do with something as plain and common, ordinary, as just your personal health. You've been living for years and years with brokenness physically. Not honoring the temple that God has given you. You may have come to a place where you wonder, this wall that's broken down, can it ever be rebuilt? For some of you, the walls may go a lot deeper than anything on the surface. For some of you, the walls may be internal. It may stretch back to something that happened to you in your childhood. Pain, brokenness, damage, scarring. Because of what took place months, years, decades ago, there are walls inwardly in you that are torn down. And you wonder, can those walls ever be rebuilt? For others of you, the walls may have to do with some relationships in your life with key people. They may be friends. They may be family members. And you realize that those relational walls, because of something that was said, because of a misunderstanding, because of pride, because of insult, those walls have been torn down. And you wonder, can they be restored? Can they be rebuilt? For some of you, the most important wall that's torn down is the wall of your relationship with God. You today, for whatever reason, feel like that the things that have happened in your past have caused a brokenness. They've caused destruction in your soul to the point that you're not sure if that wall with your relationship with your Father in heaven can ever be rebuilt. And you wonder. You wonder inside, can that ever be built back? That's the first question that I have for you. Is do you have walls that are broken down and need to be rebuilt? The second question I have for you is equally important. And that question is this. When you look at the walls, when you see the destruction, when you see the brokenness, do you just see what is? Or do you see what can be? Do you just see what is? Or do you see what can be? Because how you answer that question will to a very large extent determine whether or not the walls are ever rebuilt in your life. How you answer that question will determine whether or not you step forward out of where you are right now into where God wants you to be. One of your own writers in the contemporary world of today has said that we become what we behold. That is to say that whatever it is we have in our mind, whatever it is that we are viewing, whatever it is that we are seeing, whatever it is that we behold, we tend to become. And so let me translate that. If the wall that you see that is broken down in your family, in your marriage, in the life of your children, the wall that you see that is broken down in your vocation, in whatever realm of life it's in, if the wall that you look at that is broken down, if all you can see is what is there and not what can be, then all you're going to ever have is what is. And in order for you to step away from and above what is, you have to come to see what can be. Now I know that some of you will ask a question. Why should I try to see what can be when all I've ever known is what is? All I've ever known in my relationship with God is what is. All I've ever known in my career is what is. All I've ever known in this marriage is what is. And I have a picture in my mind that says that what is what will always be. I want you to understand this truth. If you leave with one thing today, I want you to leave with this. The reason I'm coming today and telling you to not just focus on what is, but on what can be, is because God, Jehovah, the one true God, is in the business of building walls. And He told my people, long before I had to come onto the scene and begin rebuilding, through one of our own prophets, He said to my people, He says that I have plans to prosper you, not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. And I understand it's the case that even your New Testament writers who have come and have written after the coming of the Messiah have had a very similar message. In fact, I understand that one of your writers, Peter, has said that God has created for you a living hope that is a fixed, firm, solid foundation. Now, the very nature of hope, do you think that that sounds like something that means that you're always going to be where you are today? Absolutely not. See, when you look at the Bible and when you look at the words of the Messiah, Jesus, and He says, I have come that you might have life and that you might have it more abundantly. He makes it very clear that the enemy comes to steal and kill and destroy. And the enemy has come and he may have broken down some walls in your life. But there's no king, no King Artaxerxes, no king on this earth like the King Jesus who can come and rebuild that. And so for those of you right now who are warring in your mind and in your heart whether to believe or not that there is a better future, whether to believe or not that God can take the junk and the crud and everything that has been torn down and broken apart and rebuild it, resurrect it, redeem it, there is a Savior who is living today as proof of the fact that God takes dead things and He turns them to life. There is a Savior today who is living proof that God can take the brokenness, the destruction. He can take a body that has been crushed and pierced on the cross and bring it back to life, bring it back to glory, so that all would see that there is a God who is in the business of building walls. And so I come to you today to try to perhaps rouse you from this mistaken belief that things will always be the way they've always been. The enemy in his desire to steal and kill and destroy, he would desire to steal the vision. He would try to kill the hope. He would try to destroy the plans that God has placed in front of you. And I, a common man, am coming to you today and saying that if you'll begin to make the conscious effort, the conscious decision not just to see what is, but through Jesus Christ begin to see what can be, then you can begin moving in the direction of embracing God's vision for your life. See, the fact of the matter is that we all have brokenness. You may have been kind of like me, a religious person, pretty devout, try to follow the rules. And you may have ways of kind of masking or disguising some of the brokenness that's in you. But if you're going to rebuild the wall, the first thing that you have to do is just accept the fact that it's torn down. And for some of you, you perhaps have gotten so desensitized to the brokenness, so numb to the destruction, that the only normal you know is devastation. You see, the first thing that needs to happen is you just need to accept the fact that those walls have been torn down. But more importantly, you need to accept the fact that God is in the business of rebuilding those walls. And I know that for some of you, it's probably a stretch to believe that where you are right now in your family, in your job, where you are right now in your marriage. That in a year, 5 years, 10 years from now, there could be something significantly better. That God might have a vision for you, that He might have a future for you that extends far beyond what you would perhaps envision for yourself. But as we walk through the story of my life, you're going to find that I, as an ordinary man, embraced God's vision. And simply because I responded to God's initiative and I said, I'm willing. God did something through an ordinary, plain person that was so much greater than anything that I could have ever envisioned for myself. And I know that even though I'm standing here today and telling you about my story, well, let's be honest, that was 2,500 years ago. And you may wonder, well, God was in the business of building walls back then. Does He still do the same thing today? Can that same God who worked in your life, Nehemiah, can He work in mine? For those of you who have that question, I've asked a contemporary of yours, one of your own members, to in some ways bring my story to life. I've asked him to come and share how God is in the process of rebuilding the walls in his life. And what I want you to hear from this is that I'm not just up here talking about some theory. I'm not just here talking about some story. We're not just talking about words that are written on a page. I'm up here talking about real life and what God does with real ordinary people. And so as He comes and you have an opportunity to hear His story, I want you to hear it and I want you to receive it. And after He comes, Jason's going to come and lead you in an invitation. And as he leads you, I want you to come forward. With any wall that is broken down, with any wall that needs to be restored, I want you to come forward if you even realize that there are walls that they're still standing, but it's only by the grace of God they're standing. There are some cracks in the mortar and the stones have started to come loose. And if it weren't for the grace of God, those walls would have fallen a long time ago because you've neglected them. You've neglected them. I want you to come and say, God, repair these walls. And for those of you who have walls that need to be rebuilt from the ground up, we're going to have people up front here this morning who can help you walk into a relationship with God through His Son, Jesus Christ, to begin that process of rebuilding. I want you to come forward. And I want you to say, God, You do whatever You have to do in my life. I am totally Yours. You do whatever You have to do in my life. If it means that You have to tear down some walls that I've built up that are unhealthy and they shouldn't be there, God, tear those down. It may hurt a little bit, but I know that any touch from You in the end is going to be for the good. And so, God, You just come and have Your way in me. Whatever that looks like, I may not even trust You as much as I should to be praying this prayer, but God, help me to trust You more. I'm asking You to come and say to Your Father in heaven, God, You have Your way with me. Because I want to see the brokenness. I want to see the destruction. I want to see it stop here. And I'm coming to You as a God who is in the business of building walls, as a God who is in the business of building lives, I'm asking You to build me. At this time, Chad, if you would come and share your story.
God's laid it on my heart to tell you how He's rebuilt the walls of my life. I was saved when I was around 12 years old, and I grew up in church, and but I never really gave my heart to Him. I mean, I never really fully let Him take over my life. And when I was 22 years old, I had a baseball career, what I thought at the time. I had to make a decision between being a dad and continuing that career of baseball. And that decision that I made to go ahead and take care of my family and pursue another career drove a wedge between me and God. And that caused me to resent Him and resent my wife and my kid. And I turned to alcohol. And over the next 6 years, there wasn't very many nights that I didn't drink to get drunk. Probably over that 6 years, there wasn't three nights in a row that I didn't get drunk. And I could go to at night and get drunk, and then the next morning go to church or go to work. It didn't matter. I hid it well. And I had started a company, and God wasn't in it. God wasn't in my marriage. My marriage was in trouble. And I'd started this company 8 months after I started the company. God caused events to happen, and it went bankrupt. So I found myself in New Mexico trying to make a living. I was away from my family. The drinking got worse, and I was getting to the end of my rope. There were many nights. I always kept a pistol with me while I was out there. There was many nights I took that gun and put it to my head, and I never could pull the trigger. One night I took that gun, and after I put it to my head, and I couldn't do it. I went to set it down. I shot a hole in my apartment wall. I mean, I was so close to death. And I finally had had enough. I said, I can't do this anymore. So one night, after drinking a lot, I took a belt and I tried to hang myself. I remember losing consciousness, and God saw fit that there was another purpose in my life. And He let my little wife pick me up and get that belt off my neck. And she called my dad, and he called the police from here, and they came, got me, and took me, and I spent that night in the hospital, and they under surveillance. The next morning, I said, I can't do this on my own. So I told God, I said, whatever's left of my life, just take it, and I wanted you to have it. I don't want it anymore. I tried it on my own. I can't do it. And so he took that, and over the next few months, he helped me rebuild my marriage. I found love for my wife that I've never known that you could have, and love for my children. And he took my company. You know, I still had the remnants of my company. Right now, I have 6 employees, and my company's doing well. My marriage is better than it's ever been. And right now, I feel like He's leading me to do what He's done for me for other people. And so there's no greater joy, no drug or alcohol can do anything like what you get the feeling of helping somebody else. And I'm just living proof that He can rebuild walls. And thank you.